Charlie felt that if he knew more about religious orders, he would probably disapprove of them. He gave Hillary, the intrepid bird woman, a lopsided smile, thought briefly on how much he missed Bex, then walked slowly toward Kit Palfrey. In his head he heard Mick Jagger singing Sympathy for the Devil. "Allow me to introduce Brother Simon." Palfrey was hunched into a very 1930s dark coat with a little velvet collar. He appeared to be suffering from the cold, which blew in from the east, on a wind as serious as it gets outside of a Force 10. Charlie took his right hand from the pocket of his leather bomber jacket, wished he had not, then extended it to clasp Brother Simon's bony paw. Charlie's other hand was gloved, and clutching the Adidas sports bag in which he carried his overnight things. His change of raiment as he thought of it now. In this place, everything was rapidly becoming biblical. "He's in charge of the gate," said Palfrey. "I also do the phones and mail." Brother Simon all but grinned. This showed a smidgen of pride that caused Charlie to give the monk one of his penetrating looks, as if he were trying to gaze into the man's soul. Later, Brother Simon said to the assistant porter, Brother Crispin, that he felt the little neat one would make a good novice master. He's got a look that put the fear of God into me. It was something that Charlie sometimes did to people. A much younger girl had once told him, "It's your immaculate turnout, Charles, your size. And if you don't smile, well, you can be dead sinister if you don't smile." Brother Simon was a beanpole of a man with a beaked nose and wild, dark Italianate hair. In the world, he'd been a toper, addicted to strong drink, with the kind of dedication usually reserved for love and marriage. To be fair, though, he had found God, who must have delivered the spiritual equivalent of a short, sharp shock. Quite suddenly, Simon had eschewed the hooch and entered the Order of St. Jerome. Now he was all efficiency and business. "It's good to meet you, Brother Gauntlet." Members of the Order always prefixed names with brother, sister, or father. "Oh, please, don't stand on ceremony. Please, Brother Charlie." "No, Brother Charles, I think," Palfrey muttered, without enthusiasm. "Sure, Kit." Gauntlet's face lit up with a grin, and he quickly gave Palfrey a broad wink. "Come, Brother Charles, Brother Kit." Pause. "Let's go in out of the cold." Brother Simon pushed against the heavy oak and iron-banded door and led them into the gatehouse, a wide, stone-slabbed entrance hall with a high, ornate ceiling and heavy Victorian furniture. In the middle of this huge hallway stood a big oak table, scattered with copies of the Church Times, the Tablet, and, incongruously, Homes and Gardens. "The Father Superior insists on the Tablet for the book reviews, and, unhappily, the Church Times for the recipes." "And Homes and Gardens?" queried Palfrey. "Don't even ask, brother." Simon's right eyebrow lifted with a mind of its own. He took two steps toward a closed door to his right, then changed his mind, swinging around, slipping the lion's head clasp on his cloak, then doing an ungainly pirouette, and sailing the cloak around him so that it billowed and lifted, a theatrical gesture revealing the grey habit he wore as a lay brother. The cassock was cinched around his waist with a black leather belt, from which hung a 6-inch plain wooden cross. Later, Charlie learned that lay brothers were distinguished from priests by both the colour of the habit and the black and silver crucifix worn on the belt by priests. Postulants and novices were identified by 3-inch plain white crosses. Simon gathered up his cloak, oblivious to the somewhat camp gesture he had just performed. "Should have been a dancer," observed Palfrey. A good job Father Benedict wasn't around. Father Benedict is a novice master, and he's quite capable of letting anyone know when they've committed an act of unacceptable behaviour. Behind his back, the novices call him the Beast Master. Mortal sin, I should imagine. He hasn't been with us long, but I believe he was born fully formed in his habit and everything. Charlie looked at the painfully small radiator and thought, cold as a witch's... charity. Cold as charity. Aloud, he asked if it was as cold as this everywhere, or did they make a special effort to welcome visitors with an Arctic blast? Well, Brother Charles, now that you mention it, the chapel and refectory are pretty chill, and you'll get fair shamed, as old Father Whitehead would say, a Somerset man, if you walk around the cloisters at this time of the year. But the cells are kept a little above freezing, and the guest lodgings are positively luxurious at a steady 50 degrees Fahrenheit. We stick to the old currency here. Fahrenheit, miles, inches, feet. Rod, pole, or perch. Charlie smiled. Precisely, and the King James Bible. Brother Simon gave a short, sharp nod of agreement. Well, I'd best let the Father Superior know you're here. He'll want to meet you, I'm sure. Just up his street, the scholarship you've set him. You've put the cat among the pigeons here, I can tell you. The diaries have set the novices in a fine old stew. Did you know the first 5 years are the worst when it comes to the temptations of the flesh? Never had the problem myself, Gauntlet lied, but I can see it could lead to difficulties in an enclosed society like this. Verily, verily, brother. The tall monk returned to the door on the right of the entrance, and after an indecisive pause, opened it. Before the door was firmly closed again, Gauntlet briefly glimpsed a roaring fire, a comfortable armchair, and a table piled with papers surrounding two telephones. One red, the other black. Nice little caboose, he muttered. Palfrey grinned and nodded. The temptations of the flesh obviously come in several different sizes. Some like it hot. And who can blame them? Talking of which, what am I hearing behind Brother Simon's words? Don't know what you mean. Palfrey, deadpan, marble arch. I'm sure you don't. But what, kid, do I represent? Yon Simon implied that I had put the cat among the pigeons. What am I, Kit? Am I not retired? Have I come down as a representative of the office? Because if I have, we could be in trouble. The office doesn't take kindly to people posing as card-carrying members when they're not. Palfrey looked away, then glanced pointedly at his watch. I must make haste. I have an appointment with our translators, Father Harry and Father Hugh. Before you go, Charlie laid a hand on Kit's arm, the muscled fingers making Kit wince. Okay, right, Charles, right. Yes, you are here to give everything the imprimatur, so to speak. Add a bit of weight. Now, I must fly. Catch up with me after you've seen the beak. The beak? Gauntlet repeated without feeling as he watched Palfrey whisk his way through a door to the rear. Suddenly, Charlie felt cold again, and it had little to do with the temperature of the gatehouse. This was the chill felt when you're suddenly alone in a hostile environment, and the monastery gathered around itself a feeling of intense alienation and loneliness. Then the gatekeeper's door opened, and Brother Simon returned, his lips locked in a mirthless smile. The Father Superior's ready to see you now, Brother Charlie. Oh, good. He wanted to quote from Hamlet. For this relief much thanks. 'Tis bitter cold, and I am sick at heart. He was not a complete fool, though, so he kept quiet, and allowed the beanstick Simon to shepherd him out into the first cloister, then on through passages and doors, until they stood at the Father Superior's threshold. Charlie felt as though the monk had put him under some kind of arrest. Was it the porter's attitude, his manner, the way he moved and spoke? A tugboat to Gauntlet's liner? Brother Gauntlet, Father Superior, Simon intoned, ushering Charlie into the bleak, book-lined room. Ugh, good. Sit ye doon, sit ye doon. The figure that untangled itself from the captain's chair behind a military desk, with green and gold skivers, was as tall as the porter. A gaunt, severe-looking academic, with long, slim fingers, a smooth, bald pate, dark, satanic eyes behind strong lenses, and a straight patrician nose that would not have looked out of place on Romilius. Behind Charlie's back, the door closed with a whispered, "I'll await you, brother." So, Charles Vincent Gauntlet. It's been a long time. Gauntlet peered at the face that beamed down on him, as a lost man will study terrain, searching for some tiny detail that will tell him exactly where he is. Father Gregory Scott's voice was almost harsh. You don't remember Scott of the DP camps? Second Lieutenant Gauntlet.